and barked away the sea leopards. Someone was told to kill the dogs because supplies were running low, and the dogs gathered around the fire, their tongues wet with kindness, knew nothing of betrayal. They knew how to sit and come, how to please, how to bow their heads, how to stay. A poem by Faith Sharon Shackleton's Decision, from her collection Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Written by Joy Biles, produced by Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Twenty-eight minutes before 4 o'clock here. You're in tune with KTLO News. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. Usually on Tuesdays, we have a special session that looks at some sustainability issues for Juno. And today we're going to go backwards in time to one of the programs that we recorded right at the end of the gardening season. We interviewed Pat Harris out at the Community Gardens about her composting operation out there. Well, time now for another exploration of an aspect of sustainability here in Juneau. We've been doing these on Tuesdays for the last little while here, and we'll continue through the month of October and then into November with this. Probably take a little of December off, and then we'll probably be back with more of them in January. We've been looking through this month at reducing the stream of waste that goes into the landfill here in Juneau, and we've looked at a number of different things, but this show and the next one, and I think the one after that, are all three going to be looking at aspects of composting waste that we don't have to send to the landfill, because we can use it to make soil for our own gardens. We interviewed Pat Harris at the Community Garden on the topic, and this is what she had to say about it. We're here with Pat Harris in the Community Gardens, and if you hear gunshots in the background, it's not a war zone. We're across the street from the firing range, and we're standing next to one of Pat's several plots out here. And she's going to talk to us about her composting operation. So, Pat, I'm looking at about a 4x10 bed that has a whole bunch of vegetable cuttings heaped on it and black plastic ready to be put over them. What's going on here?
Well, this is my overflow composting pile. I have my other composting bins full with earlier in the season garden refuse. And so at the end of the season, I always have a lot of leftover organic stuff. So I kind of do a sheet composting on one of the beds. And this bed formerly was a garlic bed earlier in the summer, and I harvested the garlic in August. And then I planted a cover crop, and then I've turned that under, and so now I'm doing a sheet composting on top of that bed.
And when you say sheet composting, what does that mean?
That means a pile of vegetable crap. And I'm going to mix it with, I've got some rabbit manure here to put in, and I'll have some wood shavings just to give it a little carbon. And this won't break down over the winter, but it will definitely start to decompose, and I will then empty out my other compost bins, which are basically almost finished, and I can take the finished compost out of the bins put that on the beds, and then take this unfinished compost and put it in the bins to let it finish cooking.
What is it about the composting process that changes the vegetables that we're looking at here, the vegetable cuttings, into soil? How does that work?
Miracle of nature. It's the life cycle of the living biosphere. Organic matter decays. Everything, as we know, decays, and the elements get recycled into more basic materials that can be reused by other living things.
So normally that would take longer over time. You speed it up with the composting process?
We try to, by having the right combinations of kind of green materials, and which are rich in nitrogen, and then carbonaceous materials, which are rich in carbon. Those are called the brown materials, we call them. And the right mixture, you get, it's kind of it's like a cocktail. It's the right brew to encourage microorganisms to break down the organic stuff.
How do you find out what the right brew is?
It's kind of experimental, and you can look in a lot of garden publications. They will tell you kind of what the ratios are. Some things are naturally balanced so that you can pretty well compost them without mixing with other things. But usually it's like 20 to 1, like 20 parts carbon to 1 part nitrogen, something like that. I could be mistaken, so nobody rush out and measure your compost trying to do it that way. But there's lots of information online, especially from, I think there's a Cornell site that I've referred to several times. There's a Master Composter program, actually, that's kind of comparable to Master Gardener program, and you can enroll in this 40 hours of composting instruction if you're really dedicated. And so far, I haven't gone quite that far, but I think if it were available locally, I might go for it.
Now, your garden plots are largely, there is this compost worked into all of your garden plots.
Pretty well, and it depends on what I'm going to be growing next year as to which plots I will put more compost into. The one that we have the sheet composting on, that's going to be mostly green material, so I'll be growing lettuce, chard, kale, leafy vegetables as opposed to root crops. So they usually need more nitrogen, and so that's going to be the nitrogen-rich bed.
Well, I'm noticing here it's October, and you have wonderful plants still nice and green and healthy here in your garden plots.
That's because I haven't gotten around to harvesting them all yet, and the frost hasn't really knocked them all down. But some of them are, you know, really quite frost-hardy. The rutabagas are still looking good. The carrots are okay. Parsnips are, you know, you're better to wait until this time of the year to pick them, or even later, because they get better with frost. So I'm not too far behind schedule.
Pat, there's a stage 2 to this composting over at the bin. Could we take a look at that? So we're standing in front of a black plastic bin that's about the size of a 50-gallon oil drum, and Pat just removed the lid from it. There's some plastic down in here that mostly, I think, is to cover the top to keep water out.
It's also a place to store the plastic. If I were more efficient, I'd have this over the top of the whole structure and bungeed down so that it wouldn't get so wet in there, and I will do that for winter time because I don't want it to get any wetter.
Now, down inside this bin is some lovely-looking, I guess, cooked compost or finished compost is what you referred to it as?
I wouldn't say this is quite finished yet, okay, because you can still see the straw in it, the hay. And this is from last summer's, a lot of this hay is from last summer's kids' activity where we had a peanut penny find for the harvest fair. And after that, I usually try to get some of the hay from that, and I use it to mulch my garlic in the fall, and then when garlic starts coming in the spring, I put that hay into the compost. So this is this is about a year and a half old in here with the vegetable stuff from that fall. So
now you have a number of compost bins throughout the garden. Do you have finished compost in any of them at this point?
Yeah, I can show you. I've got
okay.
I've got three bins here plus the sheet compost, and then there's another container of stuff that's pretty well finished. And this is this would have been probably from at least 6 months before, although it looks pretty coarse still, too, but it's basically in better shape. If you dig down, you can see it's a lot more composted than the last batch.
This compost that we're looking at now is in a gray garbage can, a plastic garbage can, probably recycled from when they when they
exactly
changed out the cans here.
Yes, I went along the street where I lived and harvested, and I only recycle organic materials. I recycle plastic as much as I can, so yeah, I really scored on old garbage cans.
So now this looks like soil. It has a little bit of straw in it and like that, but we're looking at dirt here that your composting process has made for you.
And so you can see it's got worms in it and still a few peanut shells from the old hay penny find for the kids, but basically it's good enough to put finished enough to put on the beds. And hopefully I will do that this winter, maybe, or I could wait until spring and put it on.
Pat, is there any problem with smell or bears or bugs when you're composting?
Well, take a whiff.
Well, I don't smell anything except good soil. So
yeah, so as I said, this is pretty well finished. The other one you just looked at is, not smelly either. I think This one is the most recent one that I've done, and so we'll take a look at that
okay.
one. This one is, I constructed this about a month ago.
And these are kits that you get, that you construct these from?
I think you can buy them disassembled is probably how you would buy them.
Mm-hmm.
These I've inherited from different people, and so I've always gotten them. They're recycled.
Recycled. Ooh. Okay, so this is fresh stuff here.
This is more fresh. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can see I've added some stuff here even in just the last couple of weeks.
But again, not really an objectionable smell or anything like that.
But it's definitely not broken down. It's got, this has got chicken manure, wood shavings, garden refuse, and brewer's yeast, brewer's grain. But it's got a long ways to go yet, so this probably won't be ready until maybe middle of next summer. But boy, it got really nice and warm. It got really hot. This one is with a hot bin.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what I do is usually pretty cold because I don't build it all at once. And this one I kind of made all at once, and it got fairly warm. So it should break down. It should be good by middle of next year, I think. This is a recycled 50-gallon drum that somebody made a homemade composter of it and left it here. So I've appropriated it. I'm not entirely happy with the design because I don't think it gets enough air. I did drill some holes in the end here, but...
this is a plastic bin of some kind.
Yeah, plastic drum. So, but it eventually it'll work.
And someone's cut a lid into it and then just put snap catches on the a thing with a piano hinge across the top of the lid.
On an axle so it will turn. You can spin it like some of the more expensive commercial ones you can buy.
And that's basically to stir the ingredients.
Yeah, you just turn it like this.
And Pat is grabbing the edges of this 50-gallon drum on the axle and kind of turning it, and you can hear the soil
clunking
inside.
It's very wet. I haven't gotten a good method yet to keep it from getting too wet. I tried to put plastic over this, and it works until the plastic blows off. That was the piece of plastic you saw on the other bin that came off of this one. So, yeah. It needs some fine refinements, but it's basically another way to go.
I guess I have one question, and that is, if someone were thinking of beginning composting, what would they need for the minimum composting operation?
Kind of depends on your situation. I think where you live, what the danger of animals getting into it is. Some of the most successful ones have been pallets, built out of pallets, but then you've got... It's pretty open to animals getting into it, so kind of depends on where you are. I like these plastic ones because they contain it in a confined space rather than just having a big pile of stuff. So that's why I don't like to leave stuff in the sheet composting too long, because it's just not as compact and efficient. You can't control it as well. So you need some kind of a good place that's... well drained. You don't want it to be sitting in a puddle of water. That's one of my problems, is things get awfully wet, and you've got to try to keep them. It's nice to be damp. You want them like a sponge, but you don't want them to be dripping wet. So,
and if someone composted and didn't have a garden space, what could they do with the compost?
Oh, boy.
Are you interested in taking it? Would you be? Would you garden it?
I've had people donate it to me. We can't accept it at the garden. We just don't have a good system for communal composting out here. I would really love to see Juno get into communal composting, and I know that is a tremendously big project, and I know that some groups have talked about it. Thanks. Get out of the drip.
Yeah.
We don't need to go in the puddle either. I don't know. Hopefully there's some solution. I know Gustavus has had some success with it. I've had people call me up and given me compost, and I have people that leave it in my car. But I'm pretty well maxed out myself, so I can't really offer to take any. But I think it's... I'm sorry, I'm going to wax rather mystical here, but I think it's almost a spiritual experience. it's part of gardening to me. You're just cycling things through and back into the ground, and to shortcut that, I think is too bad, because You're missing out on that part of the cycle. If you're going to substitute with chemicals, it's just not as... It just doesn't... It just doesn't grab me the way, knowing that, you know, I'm growing stuff in stuff that I used to grow stuff in. Does that make any sense? But
certainly
yeah.
does.
Okay.
Pat, thank you very, very much for the tour, and you're thank welcome. You for the education on composting.
Thank
I really appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you for your interest, and I encourage anybody that wants to try it because and worm composting is a whole other topic, and I hope you're talking to somebody about that, too.
We're going to be.
Very
thank
good.
You.
Very good.
Worm topic is indeed coming up. We're going to do a later show. Well, it was a repeat program. We aired that back a couple, 3 weeks ago when Pat was able to talk to us out at the garden. And next week on the sustainability talk, we're going to have Adrienne Schwartz in. She is the energy specialist for the school district and has been driving a program to save as much energy as can be saved with things like turning things off and being very conscious of the use of electricity and heat and things like that. So, and at the moment, we are about to talk to some folks from the school district who are right here because joining me in the studio is Dave Stoltenberg, who is the principal at Harborview, and with him is Cherry Eklund, who's an instructional coach at Harborview. Hi, folks.
Hi, how are you doing, Pat?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing good. So, Dave, we'll come to you in a moment, but
okay.
Ladies first, if I may, okay. Because that title really is intriguing to me. Cherry, what does an instructional coach do?
Well, I do everything from observe in classrooms to model lessons to plan professional development. I facilitate cross observations. Anything that has to do with instruction, I work with teachers, and we're working collaboratively to do all we can do to meet kids' needs and help them be as successful as they can.
So, instructional coach, in this case, you're actually coaching the instruction that goes
yes.
on. Yes. Okay. Is there a position like that at each one of our schools?
All elementary schools, the six elementary schools in Juneau School District all have an instructional coach.
How are you received by the teachers?
You know, I have really...
I'm seeing a double thumbs up from over here and a hesitant response to the question from Jerry.
No, not at all.
She's accepted very well.
I have really enjoyed working with the teachers at my school, and I find them very receptive. And it's more of a partnership. You know, I'm someone that they can bounce ideas with, or if they're struggling with something, I'm kind of a sounding board to help them problem solve and help them find resources if they need them, and... so it's been good for me professionally, and the staff has been wonderful to work with.
Do you actually go into the school, into the classrooms, and watch, observe?
I do. Mm-hmm. They might ask me to come in if there's maybe they're having trouble with transitions, or we're starting math and focus this year, so teachers are implementing some new curriculum. They might ask me to come in and watch them and see if they feel like they're doing it correctly, or maybe they're learned a new strategy at a workshop and they want to implement it, and they want me to come in and give them feedback on how they're doing, things like that.
It seems to me at one point there was a setup in the schools where you had a certain number of hours each week where the teachers sort of planned their curriculum and like that, and then did that go away? Am I
Oh, the early release time are you talking about?
Yeah, the early release time.
That did not go away.
Oh,
no.
It's still there.
That still is there. We've had to find our own time within our own school, so it varies. It's not district-wide, same slot of time.
Okay, that's what I'm aware of. So, mm-hmm. And you must work very intensely, Cherry, during that period of time.
Right. So each school's structure, we call that PLCs, professional learning communities. So each school's structure is slightly different, but we still meet in teams and work on our professional growth.
Okay. This is an aspect of the school administration that we're just, most of us outside the school don't even know it really exists, I don't think. Mm. I was not aware that someone was critiquing teaching and helping people, grow in their teaching ability.
You know, I might add something, Pat, too, is the trust level and you know, principals are more in the evaluating stage, that sort of thing. But the instructional coaches have that trust with the staff that they can go in, make mistakes, and not have to worry so much about it. And not that they have to worry when a principal walks in and there's a mistake, but it really you know, for me to see that whole process go on, it's been, I think, one of the single best things that the district has done is implemented this whole instructional coach philosophy. It's helped, I think, our teachers a lot. The art of teaching is just, it's not an easy task, and I think that teachers have felt very comfortable with Cherry. And I might add, too, that Harborview, two of the district coaches, elementary coaches, actually came from Harborview. Both were Harborview teachers, very strong teachers, and so kind of a little plus for Harborview there. But, yeah, so I think it's really established some strong framework for instruction in the classroom.
So, Cherry, you were in the classroom before you became an instructional coach.
That's right, yes.
What levels did you teach?
I've taught everything from kindergarten through fourth grade, and sometimes straight grade, sometimes multi-age.
But you're not teaching now?
No.
You miss it?
Yes. I enjoy going in and modeling lessons and being in the classroom, yes.
Yeah. Are you called on to sub and all? Or?
No, we don't sub, but I might cover a class for a teacher to go and observe another teacher. Like if teachers are working together on the same strategy and they might want to observe each other, then I'll cover their class while they do that. Or if they are attending some kind of professional development. And it not just at Harborview, they might visit another school even. So I do get in the classroom, yes.
And she's been instrumental, too. We've got the math and focus, and it's a curriculum that is in the district, and the coaches have worked pretty extensively with teachers to help get that off the ground and work through just the practices that we're using there. So,
now you've been a principal for quite a while.
Yeah, this is my sixth year here. I've been in education for 33 years, and about 24 years or 5 years have been as a principal. So.
So you've gotten comfortable with the job.
you never get comfortable with this job. it's always changing. It's been challenging, but there's lots and lots of rewards, and it's been an excellent job.
I guess comfortable wasn't the term, and I relaxed would get to it. I guess I'm kind of working toward that 10,000 hour thing. You know the guy who wrote Turning Points, who said that when you've done something for 10,000 hours, you become an expert in it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that way?
Well,
I understand that puts you on the spot of.
I feel comfortable.
This is not a time for false modesty.
No. I feel pretty comfortable with it. I haven't quite figured out how to work less than 60 hours a week. It's 60 to 75 hours a week, so there's an enormous amount of time that's put in, but. You get people like Cherry and so many of the staff that just make this job much, much easier, and there's so many rewards, and of course the students and the parents too. But it's pretty intense. Things are changing all the time, and helping people through those changes. So
you use the phrase "this job." Can you describe what a principal does?
Well, you know,
everything is not an adequate answer.
You know, you try to set the framework so that things work from a management side, so that the building runs smoothly. We're trying to get more involved in it. That's one thing I appreciate with this district. We're trying to get more into the instructional practices. Some of our staff development. We work with Washington and some other states. In developing what are the effective practices of teaching. So when we go into classrooms, we're working with the coaches this year with that, working with everything from assessments to just setting a lot of structures in place so that kids, student success is there. So there's just so many phases of, I don't want to go back to everything, but it just about is everything. So everything that you would expect to see in a school.
Well, the everything that you would expect to see in a school normally does not include running a garden and harvesting 1,000 potatoes,
right.
Which you just did this last year, I think, yep. And got it finished up in October.
Yeah, Cherry's got some of the stats on that, but we did have, I just will say that we've, our counselor, our PE teacher, General Rowe, some of the PTA people, Alaska Southeast has worked with us, and we've made some little garden beds, and I think it was like close to, I don't know, how many potatoes did we get, Jerry?
I don't have the exact number. You're testing me now.
Yeah, I think it was close to 2,000.
Yeah, I think it was around 2,400 is what I was thinking. But it really is a kind of a community support. We had parents and students and staff, and then other support agencies like Discovery Southeast kind of watched the garden over the summer and worked on it. And Youth for Environmental Action actually helped build the raised beds, and Icy Strait Lumbers donated the lumber. And we're hoping to expand it even more this next year, adding beds. Also, we're going to use a grow light system to start little seedlings in the spring. So it's been really a community, Harborview community kind of event that's pulled us all together.
Yeah, the tough part of running a garden is everybody's gone in the summer, but it sounds like you solved that very creatively.
Right.
And then in October, what we did was we had sort of a festival, invited all the parents in. And
a big party was what you
did. We did. We had halibut, and we had potato soup.
Halibut chowder.
And so, it was a lot of fun, and that's what we're trying to do, is bring a little bit more sense of community. Our site council is looking at that, and our PTA, and trying to do some things. And, Chair, you might talk a little bit about the sing-along, too, that we do on Fridays. So.
We've started on Friday mornings gathering. We kind of got the idea from Gastineau. We gather as a whole school a few minutes early before school starts. Kids fill into the commons, and we have teachers that playing guitar and fifth graders helping lead the singing. And it's just a kind of a community building time. And more parents are starting to stay and hang out with the kids the first 15 minutes, and then we disperse to class.
So it sounds like one of the creative things that the principal gets to do is to come up with literally dozens of ways to involve the community.
Yeah.
And we've heard that word before with the other interviews that I've had with principals, is basically a big part of your job is generating a community around the school.
Correct, yeah. And just trying to gather everybody together and try to move in the same direction and build that sense of strong community.
Well, we've been talking with Dave Stoltenberg. He's the principal at Harborview. We've also been talking with Cherry Eklund, who is an instructional coach at Harborview. Thank you very much for coming down and sharing your school with us.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Dick Ashford, president of Klamath Bird Observatory in Oregon, completed a career with the Navy before learning about birds in earnest. Today, he describes himself as a continuing student of birds and birding. Like many, he's taking time to share his love of birds, like looking for red-shouldered hawks, with younger generations. One of the lucky ones is his 10-year-old grandson, Jack. Here's Dick.
A couple of years ago, I decided maybe it was time to see if Jack could stand a full day in the field looking at birds. And so we took the day after Thanksgiving. And I was able to show him in one day a golden eagle in the scope perched. I was able to show him a white-tailed kite in the scope perched. A northern harrier in the scope perched. Plus an assortment of waterfowl, ducks, shorebirds over in the Great Central Valley of California. He felt that experience, and I'd like to think that some of it was because he was with his grandpa. I know that some of the experience for me was because I was with my grandson.
Bird Note salutes all who share their love of birds and enjoy days afield with young people. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Thanksgiving means more than feasting with friends. In Juneau, it also means dancing with friends at the traditional Thanksgiving Friday Barn Dance. It happens Friday, November 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. Full Circle, featuring Greg Berger, Mary DeSmet, and Doug Smith, will provide live music, and Odette Edgar will teach and call contra dances. You don't need experience or a partner to have a good time. Discounts for students and seniors free for SAGA and JVs. Don't miss the Friday Thanksgiving Barn Dance.
You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also broadcast on translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, K276 AF is on 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus, K201 AM at 88.1. Huna, 91.9, K220BT, and KTOO is on K210AS at 89.9 in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait.